Welcome to my Wellness Spring Show. Today I'm super excited to be joined by Dan Kittredge, founder of the BioNutrient Association, who is pioneering a global standard for nutrient density in food. We'll explore his journey from growing up on an organic farm to studying thousands of food samples worldwide, the surprising insights he's uncovered, and how he's empowering consumers and farmers to measure and improve the true quality of their food. So get ready for a big dose of inspiration. Welcome, Dan, to Wellness Spring. It is so lovely to have you on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure, and I know you've got a wonderful story to share, and you're on a great mission at the moment to bring about global standard for nutrient density. So would you like to unpack that and let the listeners know what you actually mean about nutrient density standards and how you plan to achieve it?
I think the basic point is that there is a very dramatic nutritional variation in the food, in food. I'd like to say if anybody's ever eaten a tomato out of the garden in high summer and then had one off the shelf in the middle of the winter, they probably know that there's a difference in tomatoes. Even if the government tells you, according to what's on the label in the package, that all tomatoes are uniform. And you know that because you've got this really sophisticated nutrient monitoring system, which you're inbuilt with, called a nose and a tongue. And it connects to so much. It connects to your well-being, to your health, your vigor, your vitality. It connects to soil health. It connects to ecosystem function, climate resilience. Aquifers and animals, farm viability. The nutritional value in food is dramatic. It varies dramatically. It connects to our health. It connects to soil health. It's a really powerful point. And I think we don't really have any way of measuring it, discerning it. If you have two or three or five choices of apples or potatoes or onions or beef or milk or rice or whatever it is you're buying on the shelf or between different points of purchase, you really have no way of knowing which ones are how good. And so this term nutrient density that we've coined now nearly 20 years ago is to bring awareness to that point and that conversation. And the standard you're referring to is the scientific effort we're going through to try to build a 1 to 100 standard in all food. So there's the, from a nutritional standpoint, there's the worst possible onion and the best possible onion. Well, what's the biochemistry? What are the nutrients? How would you define that? And then you can do that with potatoes and blueberries and apples and milk, et cetera. One piece of it is to bring empiricism and transparency to this variation in nutrient levels in food. And the second piece is to build instrumentation so that you effectively would be able to, at the grocery store or the farmer's market or the farm stand, be able to test it. And that's through a science called spectroscopy. It's effectively how the Hubble Space Telescope and the James Webb Telescope, which are flying around above us 50 miles away up or something. They're basically taking pictures of light from stars and planets that's thousands of light years away, or millions, or even billions of light years away. We can measure like what this star is made up of 10 million light years away, not by going out there and testing it, but because of the science called spectroscopy, which says that every element in chemistry is a vibration in physics. And so vibration is light, is color. So if you look closely with a flash of light, you can see what things are made up of. So the basic concept is, and it looks like it'll probably be in our hands before the end of the decade, actually in the form of your smartphone. So one of the cameras in your smartphone will have a little mini spectrometer in it, and you can, take it out of your pocket, flashlight this bag of carrots, and it'll say, boop, 20 out of 100. And flash it the next bag, it's like, boop, boop, 40 out of 100. And you flash to the other one over here, it says, boop, boop, 80 out of 100. And so if you care about your health, if you care about your family's health, if flavor means anything to you, if you want, if you'd rather eat carrots that taste good and rather not eat carrots that don't taste good, this is a way for us to, we the people, transparently and empirically be able to assess the nature of our supply chain and choose not based on labels and marketing and certifications and propaganda, which are all effectively biased as well as binary. Choose what's best for us, which will have a powerfully positive ecological benefit, environmental benefit, climate benefit, and human health benefit. So yeah, it's very exciting. It sounds a bit like Star Trek, but it actually is very solid and in the scientific literature, a very reasonable and plausible scenario. It's just not something anyone's done yet. And so I founded an organization, a nonprofit, an NGO, a charity called the Bionutrient Food Association in 2010, initially to work with growers to help them do a better job. I grew up on an organic farm. My background is as an organic farmer. My parents were active in the organic movement starting in the 1980s. But then, I think in 2017, we started a we call the Bionutrient Institute. So it's a project of the Bionutrient Food Association, and so we've been leading this research now for 8 years, and and we're making really solid progress towards this. This conclusion of defining with 1 to 100 standard quality in every nutritional quality in every single food type. And we're going to publish that and hopefully inspire people that have companies that want to build meters and, or Apple and Samsung and Google put inside their phones these little mini spectrometers. There's already, I think Huawei, the Chinese phone company, has already done it. So it's not like it can't be done. There literally already are smartphones that have put mini spectrometers in their cameras. So this is technologically possible. We just need a definition of 1 to 100 that's trustable. And we think we can completely disrupt the way agriculture is done globally. The implications for ecology and human health are massive. And it seems like to a significant degree, the nature of culture is driven by economics. Like, what makes money is what gets spread. And so if we can understand that most of us spend money on food and we can help us, we the people, choose to use our money to buy better food, then that's gonna be a driver that that the big corporates will follow because really what they want is profit and to maintain their quarterly returns. So it's really great fun. But I think that maybe is an outline of what we're up to begin with.
Well, you covered so much there, and I've put little notes. So I just want to start with you mentioned we all have a nose and a tongue. And my partner Brian and I recently bought a farm. You can see the land behind me. And we're adjusting cows and calves. And it's interesting watching the cows because they sniff at the grass and or lick it before they eat it. And the baby calves are doing the same. It's such a miracle to witness. And it just makes me think maybe that's why some children won't eat certain foods as a baby, and the parents just label them as difficult, but in fact, they just don't want to eat it. And yesterday you mentioned that a good way that we could all get involved would be to when the spectrometers come out, and as you said, some phones are already doing it now. And you also talked about the BRICS meter, so we can unpack that as well. Having friends go out food shopping, whether it's in the farmers market, the supermarkets, or pick from your own garden and have a glass of wine back at someone's house, and each of you do the test on your food and put it straight in the results into the phone. So I believe you've got a phone app as well that people can put the results in. And the big message I got yesterday, it's not about you, it's going to be a collaboration. So people with special skills can put their hands up to be part of this non-for-profit charity organization to make this happen.
Yeah, a lot there. The first thing to re-emphasize the fact that God gave us really sophisticated nutrient monitoring systems. Call it evolution, call it nature, call it whatever you want to call it. Spirit, love, I don't care what your word is. The real answer is that the answers are within. And it's not about what a meter says, it's about what your multidimensional capacities to perceive are guiding you. And that which has deeper flavor, that which has a more intense, captivating aroma, is better for you. That which is bland or bitter or otherwise not compelling, that which is doesn't really have any meaningful aroma, is empty. It's functionally, nutritionally empty. So we don't need science and technology. What we need to do is we need to remember that we already are wired with the powerful modes of perception. And that, I guess, absolutely emphasize and re-emphasize that. That is the end game conclusion of this whole conversation, is that people are reminded and empowered to trust their own inner guidance, which, is present on multiple levels. And we can start with the physical plane and tastes and aroma, but we can also talk about the deeper senses of knowing, and I'm not sure if we have time for that today, but yeah, so that's the first point I think you made. Subsequent to that, this whole thing with the smartphone and the spectrometers and the calibration, it's a project. It's a big, complex science project. It's going to require tens of millions of dollars of charitable donations to do the work, because we want all the information to be in the commons and public and open, and you can't get investors to put money into something that they're going to give away to everybody. So this is a civil society, bottom up, grassroots movement endeavor, and anybody who wants to support us, bionutrient.org is the website where you can go and find our and find it all. Bionutrientinstitute.org is where we have the research stuff. Between now and then, between now and when this whole work is done, and we've convinced Apple to put spectrometers in their phones, and Google and Samsung, there is a really simple thing called a refractometer, which has been around since 1830, so it's almost 200 years old. It costs about $10 new, so you literally need this $10 really simple piece of kit along with a garlic press, and a little chart you can download from the web called a Brix chart. And we can all, in a citizen science way, now begin to assess our supply chains and see, like, okay, I've got three grocery stores to choose from. And here in Australia, I think you've got Coles and Woolworths, and IGA seems to be the other one that sometimes is present. Of course, there's farm stands and farmers markets and farmers, so we can add those. But the idea is, you can't use a refractometer to flash a light and get a reading, because it's a thing that's 200 years old. It's very simple and very inexpensive. You have to actually take a chunk of the apple or a chunk of the potato. Not much, just enough that's the size of your thumbnail or something. And you put it in the garlic press and you squish it and you get one drop of juice out, and it goes on to the refractometer and you look through it and you get a reading. So yeah, that's the idea, is that between now and then, anybody who wants to can begin to take home your shopping, invite your friends over if you want. You go shopping there, I'll go shopping there, she can go shopping over there, and we'll bring it all out, and we'll test it, and then we can upload onto the internet, like, the point of purchase, the brand or label, the date and the reading. And Brix charts have a sort of a poor, average, good, excellent gradation. So, I mean, it's basically, the health of your children or your husband or your wife or whatever, or yourself has a lot to do with what you build your body out of. And most of what how food is grown now, well, a lot of what's in the store is grown not to optimize nutrition, but to optimize volume. And that's why it doesn't taste good. And that's why we're falling apart physiologically, is our bodies literally don't have the nutrients they need to function. And you do that for long enough, and you start falling apart. Luckily, our bodies are constantly rebuilding themselves. So if you start to eat food with high levels of nutrients in it, whatever ailments you've got can begin to reverse themselves. There was this guy, Hippocrates. Remember the Hippocratic Oath, the sort of the father of Western medicine? The sort of the one-liner from Hippocrates is, "Let food be thy medicine." This is the foundation of Western medicine, is Hippocrates, and "Let food be thy medicine" is the line.
Yes, our medicine
Pharmaceuticals are
be
not
thy
medicine.
food. No, that's
It's
great. And I
there.
love the way. Yes. So I love the way that you keep going back to how the people can taste the food themselves. It's a no-brainer. You taste the food. Does it feel good or not? However, I think today a lot of people cover it with, curry sauces or tomato sauces. And if you've grown up with that type of food, you're going to think that food is good. So how would you overcome that?
Well, I mean, medicinal plants, like the spices that would be in a curry, are intense flavor, and that is actually high levels of nutrition. So we call those plants medicinal plants because they have much more concentrated levels of nutrients in them. And that was the foundation of traditional herbal medicine, right? Was these medicinal plants. And so, okay, if you're getting a not sufficient level of something you need in your body, well, go to the medicinal plants and have them in high concentrations and use them. Use your spices in your cooking. Like it would be great if your carrots had flavor in them, but if they don't, well, find spices that have flavor and use them in the cooking of your carrots or your dal or whatever it is. I think if you're going to be buying a sauce that's got sugar and MSG and stuff like that, that's on you. That's not food, that's junk, right? Let's differentiate between junk and food. We have this term, junk food, which I think is a complete perversion. Like there's food and there's junk, and processed product should not be called food. It should be called junk. So we have to take responsibility for that and, have some self-control about what we spend our money on and what we bring into the house and what we make available to those in our families to eat. If it's not around, if it's not in the house, if it's harder for people to get their hands on it, then they'll probably make do with what's in the house. So you just have to take control and every time you spend a dollar buying junk, you are feeding the beast, right? You are part of the problem. Like it's literally your power that you're giving to feed the system, which is causing the problems. I mean, there's so much where people are like, oh, the world's bad, so much is wrong, these people are bad, those people are bad. Like, all we can control is ourselves. And when we take responsibility for our actions and make sure that our actions have sort of a basic level of integrity, we've done everything we can to make the world a better place. And we really can't do anything else except look within and take responsibility, for those things that we do. So, I would say get as much flavor as you can into your food, but let it be true natural flavor, not synthetic compounds, right? Synthetic flavoring agents are not nutrients. Those are designed to trick your tongue and trick your body, based on the fact that this is really important. Your body is wired to perceive flavor because that's really, really important for your overall well-being. But we have to sort of take responsibility for that.
Yeah, and obesity is an issue. And some of the scientists I've spoken to recently have said because we're eating low quality food, we keep feeling hungry because our body's craving the nutrients. And sometimes there could be chemicals in the food that are blocking our messages from the gut to the brain to say, stop eating. So a lot of people are overeating. And I know you run courses about soil health, and lots of them are saying soil health equals human health, plant health, animal health.
I mean, there's this thing called empty calories, which is like you can have the calories there, but you don't have the nutrients that are supposed to be coming along with the calories. And so you have a potato chip or any, I don't know, there's all kinds of processed products which are, have lots of calories but don't actually have the nutrients. And what our bodies really need is nutrients, not so many calories, actually. And so that's like literally, yeah, the hidden hunger they talk about is this sort of like our bodies aren't getting what they need from the things we're ingesting, and so that's why you're constantly craving more. But yes, I mean, the foundation of my work with the nonprofit for now more than 15 years has been these courses that I teach to growers of all scales. It doesn't matter what how big of a grower you are. You can have a few, pots on your back deck or a backyard garden or a half an acre or 1,000 hectares. It doesn't really matter. The principles of how plants have evolved to grow are the same, and they've been applicable for about 420 million years. Nature figured this thing out, and she didn't use fertilizer, right? She didn't use insecticides and fungicides. She used sunlight and air and water and soil, and it's foundationally is all mediated through the microbes. It's the bacteria and the fungi actually who evolved plants. The reason plants are green is to make sugar, which is designed to feed the soil life, who are the ones that digest the soil and feed the plant. And when you can understand that and understand the environmental conditions that you need to manage for, that's when you get, a decreased cost of production. I mean, you don't need fertilizer, you don't need insecticides and fungicides. You increase soil carbon, you increase climate resilience. Because that's how nature evolved things to work. You just have to be humble and realize that nature is the one who's in charge, and you're here to be in harmony with her, not to try to control her. That's the reality we're living in. We're living in the reality of life, not in a chemistry set. It's nice to have chemistry to, theoretically understand different things, but the milieu that we, the sea that we swim in is life, and it's only when you find harmony and symbiosis with that that you should expect things to flow well. And a lot of farmers have been trained effectively by people who are selling them products to be customers to buy products, not to work with nature. And so that's a it's a really important shift in understanding. And luckily, it's all very intuitive and exhilarating, but it does take a it does take sometimes a bit of a shift, and you know what, things have to be explained, and you have to walk people through a logic path to feel comfortable getting there. Yeah.
Yeah, and I know you're a very good educator, and a lot. Can you unpack like the gut microbiome and the connection with the brain and the soil? Because some. I believe if the soil is healthy, then humans and animals are healthy and the planet.
Well, I mean, I think the first thing is, are you getting food from healthy soil? And you can take a high quality food and process it and turn it into something that's a totally detrimental material. So there's a whole process from harvest to plate, which has to be respected and respectful, and all the traditional food ways are actually very powerful wisdoms about how to, optimize that nutritional value and the in the the microbiome system function. So it really doesn't matter what our traditional cultural heritage is. If you look far enough back, all those insights about how to take the thing that you harvested from nature without being sprayed with chemicals or irradiated or et cetera, food safety is the justification that's given for taking really good food and killing it and destroying it in many ways. So like there's a whole series of issues we've got with the legal structures of, big ag that we need to look at. But if you're able to take whole food, which has a functioning microbiome, and prepare it well, yeah, it will absolutely support our microbiome. And, in the same way that microbes evolved plants, microbes also evolved humans and animals. I think something more than 90% of the cells in your body are not human. They're bacteria, they're fungi, they're archaea. Like, we are not animals, we're ecosystems. The question is really, are we symbiotic ecosystems or pathogenic ecosystems? And they say that the microbes eat first, right? It's actually the microbes who are evolved to digest your food for you. In fact, you can't digest your food. It's the microbes that digest your food for you. That's what colostrum is, that which comes out of the mother's breast after birth, before milk, is there to establish gut flora, because without it, you can't digest your food. And so it's critically important that we have that. And if you take food grown well and it is covered, with microbes in and out, and you even ferment that, you make sauerkraut, you make kimchi, you make, I don't know, cheese or yogurt or, sourdough bread, right? Salamis. And I mean, all these things that were part of traditional foodways are actually biological ferments where effectively the microbes are pre-digesting your food for you. So it's more bioavailable. And as long as you have them in there supporting and constantly feeding and amplifying the diversity of your microbiome, that's where your health comes from. And yeah, they say that
Absolutely.
the foundation of your immune system is in your gut. The better the diversity of your gut flora, the stronger your immune system. It's completely, I mean, the science now finally really is coming out to verify that. But we also have the other story, which is germs are bad, and you should, wash your hands with antibacterial soap, and everything should be irradiated and packaged in plastic bags so we can't get any, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I guess you got countervailing storylines, but I say when what humans say and what nature does differ, the humans are wrong. So we just have to have context about what really is going on here.
Yeah, I think the saying the proof is in the pudding is, becoming profound at the moment, and lots of scientists are even agreeing, you might not have the scientific data yet, but if people are healing themselves, for example, I healed my own ovary and thyroid cancer within 2 weeks from food, Reiki healing, crystals, positive affirmations, and having fun being in nature. I just think we don't get sick, we're just out of alignment. So the doctors put it down to a spontaneous remission. However, I knew, I was just out of alignment. So I think more and more people are waking up, and you were blessed to grow up on an organic farm, and you said that your parents started an organic movement. Can you unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, well, spontaneous implies like there's no reason for it, or like the whole principle of science, right, is like cause and effect. So
Yeah.
I mean, spontaneous, it may have happened rapidly, but it had to have had causes for it to occur. And for them not to be curious about what the causal factors were that were able to accomplish this amazing result in such a short amount of time, betrays the fact that they're not really engaged in the scientific method. So, and the principle of science, which is a beautiful principle, right? I mean, like, it's a dispassionate, like,
Yeah.
let results guide us, let us be humble and presume we don't know the answers, and let facts be our teachers. I think it's a beautiful thing, the scientific method, but it's in many cases those who are in the lab coats and they have the PhDs that actually foundationally don't follow its basic principles. So, call a hypocrite a hypocrite. if you, if you don't mind, you presume to be coming from this place of authority based on this principle, which is a beautiful thing, but you're actually not walking it. You can say you're a Christian and then you violate the precepts of Christ. Well, you're not a Christian. You may go to a church, but that does not make you a Christian. Let's have an honest conversation about these things. But to the point of my background, I'm completely privileged. Obviously, we all have our different privileges, but I did grow up on an organic farm, and it wasn't organic when my parents started the farm, because organic, it wasn't a word that had a certification that you could say, and they did found an organic farming organization in Massachusetts in the early 1980s. They were one of the first organic organizations in the US, and they helped write some of the first organic standards in the country. And that was their professional career. My mother was the executive director of the organization for 35 years. My father was the editor of the journal, and they organized the annual conference together. And so, I definitely have a background in the movement.
And going back to the doctors, you've got Dr. Zach Bush, who you're familiar with, and he said he had witnessed lots of people healing themselves through meditation and so forth. And the same with Jo Dr. Joe Dispenza at his week-long events. These are people getting out of wheelchairs, people with stage four cancers that are healed, all within a week. And, I've heard Dr. Zach Bush saying, he, as a medical doctor, he couldn't write down spontaneous remission. He knew what caused it because you looked at the cause. And I've reflected on my journey, and I know what was the mental cause that brought about this imbalance. And I just think, the health system should be called a disease system, because you go to see a doctor, and in the UK, it's 15-minute sessions. And here in Australia, the same, and you might not even have 15 minutes, you might get less, So traditionally, when you talk about Indigenous people or our ancestors, they would sit around, and you have a chat, however long that is, and you have that beautiful connection, and the answer comes out. But so what I liked yesterday when you were talking about your chats, your scales and the testing, was I was surprised that the organics and the farmers markets weren't skyrocketed the best and healthiest in all areas. Do you want to unpack that?
Sure, yeah, and but the your initial point there about what causes healing, and let's be clear that having the foundational nutrients in food is really helpful, but we are multidimensional beings. We have emotional bodies, we have mental bodies, we have spiritual bodies, and if we're talking about health and vitality and grounding consciousness, it's much more than just about the physical substance of food. What I say to people is, you're eating, if ingesting, taking into your being is, we call that eating, like you can ingest, physical substance, but you also take in emotions. And if someone's propagating an emotional field or emotional, intensity that's dissonant or disharmonious to you, when you take that in, like you're eating that, it's going into your body, you're holding it. If someone's got ideas that are full of fear or whatever it is, the more you take that in and hold that and propagate that, the more that is foundationally part of your disease. And the less you're in tune with your subtle energy and your life force and prana, I mean, call it what you will, the less the less well you are. So I don't think it's spontaneous. I think there are causal factors that can be understood and can be engaged, and we need to take responsibility for all those things. And just if you take part in propagating negative emotions, you are propagating negative emotions. If you insist on telling fear stories, that's you're holding that fear. Like this is it's really simple, but it's really powerful, and it's like not necessarily something we hold ourselves to account on, but it's really important. But to the point of farmers markets and local and organic and that kind of thing, as someone who grew up on an organic farm, whose parents wrote some of the first organic standards in the US, who every Saturday morning was at the farmers market selling, our vegetables at the farmers market through my entire childhood, I would be the person you would think who would tell you that organic and local are better. But the problem with science is when you have facts, like the levels of nutrients in organic food are not particularly better. The levels of nutrients at farmers markets are not particularly better. Then you have to sort of say, well, even though I was told we were better, and that was a sort of the ethos and the religion and the dogma that I was brought up with, the facts do not seem to be agreeing with that. And what we understand is that the thing that causes food to be more nutritious is the function of the microbiome. And just because you're organic does not mean you have a well-functioning microbiome. Just because you're from around here does not mean your soil has a well-functioning microbiome, right? You can not apply chemicals, that's all well and good, but microbes need air and to breathe and water to drink. And if your soil is tight or your soil is dry, the microbes are dead and they can't feed your plant. And the things you're producing are not nutritionally superior. So I mean, it really does look like the microbiome is the bottom of the food chain. And only when it is flourishing should we expect the middle of the food chain, which is the plants, and the top of the food chain, which is the animals, to flourish as well. Certification labels don't actually connect to that. Just because someone is your neighbor does not mean that's what was happening in their field. It all actually makes sense, but it does fly in the face of a lot of our comfortable storylines that we like to tell about how we're better, depending on where we come from and what our philosophical perspectives are. So, yeah.
Yeah, and as we've been traveling around Australia, we've met many different farmers and pioneers and scientists, but they all think their way is the best. And I know you've come across that as well with your nutrition density project. And like you said, the end result is not about where the food comes from or how it is made. The end result is what the test of that particular food comes back so you can standardize it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it foundationally it does go back to how it was grown, but a certification label does not have a meaningful connection to the result. It's the
Yeah.
way in which you lovingly, sentiently, consciously engage the land as though it was a living being, because it is, and support it to optimize the level of life. That's what gives you the result of better nutrition. You can't treat it like it's a factory floor. You can't engage with a series of, regimented protocols, because every moment is unique and every piece of land is unique, and you have to engage it like you would when you're raising a child. And, it can be crying for five different reasons. It can be hungry. It can be cold. It can be scared. It can be tired. And you have to be sensitive enough as a parent to say, my child is tired. They need a nap. My child is scared. They need to be held. My child is cold. They need a blanket. My child is hungry. They need to eat. It's your responsibility as the caretaker, as a steward, to discern and to support and to even prevent that crying from happening. That's what we really should be doing, is being so proactive that bubble of flourishing love is constantly held around them. So the beautiful, optimal potential can be realized. I mean, in Australia, I have found many, many brilliant, agronomists, researchers, farmers, people who have pushed the envelope in the broader ecosystem to a great degree. You can bring something to offer and still not be the next coming of Christ, right? It's like,
Yeah.
yes, you have an important insight, but that is an insight which is part of a whole functioning system. And so there's a difference, ego and things like that are they're dangerous. You know, if people start to tell you you're amazing, you know, you got to be really centered in yourself to realize that you're not, that you're, you know, you're one of us, and you should maintain humility. Yeah, you haven't found the answers to life. You've been able to offer a piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, well, I believe that we are spirit beings in the physical body. So we're all these divine beings, and we come here to share our unique skills and talents. And going back to the land and the food, you know, you can feel the vibration in the food. And as you said, it's a live ecosystem. So if you love and nurture it like your baby, then you know, it's going to be full of this love that you're talking about, the juiciness of life. So you're eating pure divine love, and it's going to nourish every cell and atom in your body. Going back to your project and the farmers, because it's like not everybody wants to collaborate because they think it's my way or the highway. So how do you see your project moving forward, and can you share with us who are you looking for to help you move this project forward?
I feel like you say two things and I respond to the first thing and the second thing. You got a little bit of a dance going back and forth here. You make a point and then you ask a question, and I respond to the point and then I ask the answer the question. So this is a nice little dance. You said we are spirit beings inhabiting a physical body, and I would augment that and say I think we're inhabiting multiple bodies. I think we have a physical body. I think we have an emotional body. I think we have a mental body. I think we have a energy body. I think we're multidimensional beings, and we're only taught in this Western culture about the physical body. We're not taught about the other ones. But with any, you know, basic level of consideration, you can, you know, come to a conclusion that there probably are other aspects of our being besides the physical form. But yeah, I would completely agree with you that we are a drop of love, of divinity, having an individuated experience. But I think the bodies we're carrying around are so amazingly profound that, you know, the more we're willing to look within, the more fulfillment we'll find. I think, you know, it's like, it's so profound, it's so deep, it's so multidimensional, and it's all access to it is within. Like, in so many cases, we're taught that the answers are outside, and we're, you know, directed externally for stimulation and engagement. And my personal experience has been that the deeper you can go within, the greater the fulfillment and pleasure you experience. So I'll just say that as an not as an aside, as a very central point. But as it pertains to the work we're doing with the definition of nutrient density. Yeah, at the moment, here we are at the end of September in 2025. We've just begun up what we're calling a series of global listening sessions, where we're bringing this proposed plan of how to define quality in food around the planet. We'll be in five continents over a little over 2 months, 2.5 months, having conversations as we had, you know, where you were at yesterday in Byron Bay, where there's a bunch of, you know, I was amazed by the amount of really serious thought leaders who were present and engaging the conversation. Totally honored by that. We're looking for that. We're looking for people, you know, all spectrums, you know, our researchers and, you know, biochemists and nutritionists and agronomists and farmers and thought leaders and consumers and chefs and, you know, government agents and you know, indigenous peoples. Like, we have a proposed plan. We're calling it a treaty, like a document that is to be iterated upon, where the collective can come together and say, this needs to be improved, change that, make this better, so that hopefully at the end of this series of global listening sessions, we have a plan that is deep and comprehensive and inspiring. And our hope is that people will want to put their name on it, sign the treaty. You know, I, this person, we, this organization, you know, whoever it is, supports this vision about how we can, as a human culture, society, global like we are all humans come together around an empirical framework for what is quality in food, so that we can have a common alignment and high ground, we think, around which a beautiful social movement can coalesce based on building solutions, not fighting problems. So for those who are interested in that process, the URL is bionutrientinstitute.org/treaty. We're welcoming anyone who wants to read it, to put their name on it if they like it, to offer critiques, suggestion, to share with their friends. Yeah, we really want this to be something that we the people can consensus on, and it's not just a organization said, we've got the answer and we're going to do it, and you'll have to deal with what we come up with later. So, yeah, I think that's
Yeah,
to the point you were
I
asking.
absolutely love that. And to dance back to what you said about the different bodies, when I teach Reiki, I call it PEMS. In England, we have the, or in Britain, we have afternoon tea with a glass of PIMS. And with the spiritual work I do, I call it PEMS, physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual. So I encompass everything as a whole. And work with the chakras and the auras, but that would be another deep conversation. And I know this is the way you work. You see everything as a whole. You're inclusive of everyone. You don't necessarily have to be the steerhead. You are doing it for the highest good of all. And this is why you want philanthropists, because there will be no return on investment for investors. And it's about people who want to volunteer their special skills to make this global project happen. And I would just like to honor you for your commitment to this cause, because it's been a long journey, but now it's spiraling forward, and it's crucial for you to get the extra money, because, as you say, money drives this world at the moment, unfortunately. So you need the money to help this project to continue rolling forward.
Thank you. This is I love this dance we've got back and forth going with this conversation. Yeah, you said PEMS, physical, emotional, mental, spiritual. I guess my point of reference, where I feel like I've found my deepest insights, has been in the Sanskrit Vedic tradition, and I'm pretty sure they've got at least five bodies identified, if not a few more. I'm
Oh,
the
yeah.
last one. I'm the last one to say that I know the answer. I can tell people that if you haven't deeply investigated the profound and ancient wisdom that's housed in the Vedas, if you haven't exposed yourself to the science of the East, there's an amazing amount that you just have no idea, you don't even know about. So, as strongly as I can recommend a point of direction to attend oneself. These other cultural heritages have an immense amount to offer, immense amounts to offer. But to the point of the research, et cetera, yeah, this is at its basis a science project, and we're going to be running lots of samples of crops from all continents for a whole bunch of different nutrients, and we're doing human health trials, and we're looking at microbiome, and we're measuring soil, and we're capturing all kinds of metadata about management practices, and it's all in the commons. And it does cost money. And whether it's 100,000 people writing, making a $5 donation every month, or, five people writing a $5 million check, whatever it is, it's going to cost money. Not that much, really, in the big scheme of things, but we can't do it without the cash because these things do cost money. So that's a piece of it. But those who may have a little bit of money but also have a lot of heart and energy, I think helping out, volunteering, putting your shoulder to the wheel, offering whatever skills you have or specialties, or saying, hey, I'm here, tell me what five things I can choose from and I'll step into it. That's one thing I hadn't actually prepared myself for before starting these listening sessions, was that one of the best things that we're going to get from this all is like a bunch of really cool people who want to help. And it's so valuable. It's so immense. Like what that desire to serve, which so many of us have, is the desire to really help make the world a better place. It does not, who was it? Margaret Mead. A few committed citizens can change the world. In fact, it's the only thing that ever has. I truly believe that. If not now, when? If not us, who? We've got this. Like, it is entirely at our fingertips to transform this planet into a much better place. Reversing climate change, reversing chronic disease, solving some of these apparently intransigent existential issues with politics and economics. I mean, we know everything we need to know. There's a lot of us who want betterment. It's just a question of can we actually behave in the model of nature, which is symbiosis, collective, humble, diverse symbiosis. That's the model of nature. It's not top-down control, it's symbiosis. And I think, if we can learn that lesson, we're golden. And the pleasure-pain principle says the more you suffer, the more you begin to be willing to change your ways. And there's a lot of suffering out there right now. So I think it's an amazing opportunity. I feel very, very heartened about,
Yeah,
where we
well, I
stand.
got goosebumps when you, I call goosebumps are called truth bumps, with everything you were saying. Then my body was starting to shiver and the hair stand on end. So that's wonderful. And this is as this is a wellness show, what is your must-do wellness tip for yourself? What do you do to keep well?
Boy, I mean, maintain integrity, listen to the voice within, walk your talk. I don't know. I mean, find your calling and serve it. For me, the thing that gives me more pleasure than anything else is, and I think, maintains my, coherence, et cetera, is I when I was young, I was in my early 20s, I was, I kind of, I got, I was, I had not found the answers I was looking for. And so I basically took off and spent a bunch of time up in the Himalayas. And I was actively practicing the techniques from the tantras and the Vedas, learning how to activate my chakras and run prana through my nadis and all those all there's so much amazing stuff that you can do just with your attention and intention. And so when I can lay down in bed or I wake up in the morning and I'm just like, I can tune my attention into the pranamaya kosha, the energy body, and I can just feel that energy vibrate and flow in my body. I think that's sort of, it's a really powerful thing. It's a really wonderful, and it's more pleasure than anything else. It literally like there's no better way to feel good than to tune into your deeper nature. So staying present with that as much as possible, I think, is the really thing to do is like, find that deep sense of pleasure within and have that be your center.
I can resonate with that. And what gave me joy yesterday, I saw you walking barefoot, and you said you're always barefoot. And I used to promote the barefoot doctor, Aka Stephen Russell, who was a Taoist teacher. And it just reminded me of my days with him. And it's just having that wonderful connection with Mother Earth. And I know that you told me also that if you had one wish for children and people on the planet, it's for them to go and live on land so the c children can connect with land and Mother Earth.
No, I do wear shoes when I'm in stores and airports and stuff because you're supposed to, but I don't like wearing shoes. It doesn't feel comfortable to me. I did grow up barefoot on a farm and I don't like wearing shoes. It doesn't feel good. Whatever doesn't feel good, don't do, right? I mean, it's so simple. That which is causing you pain or discomfort, don't do. That which causes you deep fulfillment, do. Follow that essential guide, which is like there with you at all moments, and stay present, and you're good to go. But yeah, I think, indigenous cultures, cultures that were living in harmony with nature globally had common wisdom and insight, and they operated at, each individual was a, I would say, a much more whole being on average. They were, accessing many more aspects of themselves. And it seems to me that that is our birthright. Our birthright is to engage at multiple levels of being. And what this culture teaches us, this Western culture primarily, is that the physical plane is all that is. And we're told that, all truth is external and things like that. And so I think this early childhood development stage of life is critically important. The science is, it's categorical. What you experience in your first couple of years of life sets your trajectory for the rest of life. And this is what I do with my children. And I think others would be, if it's too late, then help your kids, support your grandkids. The more kids are not perverted by screens and buildings and toxic chemicals and wrong thoughts, the more they're able to freely explore in a natural setting, they're, and find themselves, their deeper selves, and be centered in that, the more we have a future. I think, the indigenous cultures made decisions based on the seven generational principle. Like, how is this going to impact my seventh generation in the future? And if it's going to be not good, then you don't do it. It's only that'll have a positive impact is when you make a decision to do something different, and to do anything. So I think we need to be thinking in that way. I think we need to be making our decisions and acting our lives out in a way that is taking responsibility for that future. I'm certainly, I'm almost 50 now. I don't think I had this perspective when I was 20, although I did make those choices about how to be a father when I was in my 20s. I don't think I properly, whatever. I guess, wisdom accumulates over time. But yeah, as I get older and as I, have more context and perspective, it becomes more and more visceral, that like insight that this is how we need to be taking responsibility for organizing things going forward.
Thank you. And I usually ask, but I think you just answered it. If there was one thing you could do differently to change the world, what would it be? And I think maybe focusing on the seventh generation and conscious living could be your answer.
I mean, what I'm doing, what I've committed my life to, what I, what I feel like my calling is creating a reality where the food for everyone is better next year than it is this year. Increasing quality of the food supply, improving the nutritional caliber of food, I think is foundational for grounding our multidimensional coherence. If the thing you're build the things you're building your body out of are incoherent, you shouldn't expect to be able to ground your higher nature. This is called harmonics. It's like it's a it's these are it's basic physics. It's basic physics, metaphysics, music. These are dynamics and that exist. And so, yeah, that's what I'm doing right now in my life. Yeah.
Thank you. This has been an absolutely wonderful, insightful conversation. And I'd like to thank you for giving up your precious time and for your wonderful sharings. And I'll put your websites with the show links. So thank you for being on the show.
My absolute pleasure. I've totally enjoyed this conversation. The caliber of the interviewer, has a profound effect on what comes out of the interviewee. So, I feel like you pulled out a bunch of good stuff out of me. So, well played. Well played.
Thank
Thank you.
you.